Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. Join us as we chat in a mellow mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Ashok is here.
Hello.
Zach is here.
Yep.
And as always, I am your host, Alex Trebek.
Alex Trebek, I want to take Bohemian Grove for 400.
Bohemian Grove for 200.
Yep, so tonight, or our thoughts tonight, really, are about the Bohemian Grove. Grove. We have mentioned it slightly one time, but today we're going to hyper-focus on this mysterious event slash, we'll get into it. We'll discuss what exactly the Bohemian Grove is. But before we get into that, I suppose, as always, crucem sanctum.
Thoughts tonight. We are back. That was Ruchim Sanktam, as always.
Ruchim Sanktam.
And this week, we are talking about the Bohemian Grove. And this is Zach's choice of topic. You want to tell us a little bit about the Grove?
Yeah, what is it?
I didn't do any research, man.
The Bohemian Grove is a gentleman's club in the Redwoods of California, San Francisco. It's 2,700 acres of just like cabins where a bunch of rich people get together and hang out, and it's privately owned. Nobody's allowed to go there. No women are allowed. The waiting list is like 20 years or 15 to 20 years, and you have to have like at least $20,000 and recommendations to get in said club.
All male club.
It's a gentleman's club.
But do you pay $20,000 to get in?
Yeah, but that's not even getting reassurance if you're going to get in or not, because the best way to get in is if you get referred by one or two more members.
Right.
If there's like three members that recommend you, and if you have the money for it, then they'll probably let you into it. But even still, you'll be waiting on a 15-year waiting list.
Yeah, that's insane.
Which is pretty weird. It's not like a golf gentleman's club or anything like that either. And the reason why it's so obscure and strange is because of like former presidents that are in it, or like artists or musicians or directors, people that are still currently alive and still in the club, and then people that are deceased. It's just strange. Mm-hmm. And no one really knows what goes on there. There's, what's that guy's name that broke into it?
Alex Jones. Yeah, he broke
it. He's like one of the first ones in like early 2000s to like get actual footage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Them like doing a, what was it called? Like an effigy or something?
I don't know what the...
like they burn sticks wrapped in like human
like
form. Yeah, they do a ritual.
Cremation of care.
Yeah, they do the cremation of care in front of a giant, like 20-foot cement owl.
Yeah.
It says here, the Grove is the site of a 2-week retreat every July, as well as other small get-togethers throughout the year. Mm-hmm. At these retreats, the members commune with nature in a truly original way. They drink heavily from morning through the night, bask in their freedom to urinate on the redwoods, and perform pagan rituals, including the cremation of care, in which the members wearing red hooded robes cremate a coffin effigy of dull care at the base of a 40-foot owl altar.
And I remember,
I was right then.
Remember when I was a kid when I heard about Alex Jones breaking? I used to like Alex Jones as a kid because I was a kid, and I was like, damn, he exposed the Grove, man. Yeah. Hell yeah, Alex Jones.
I didn't even know what the Grove was until I'm 27 years old. I like stumbled upon it, like falling down an internet rabbit hole.
I mean, it's creepy, that's for sure.
It's strange.
So it says some of the industries are what are some of the industries represented among the members? Major military contractors, oil companies, banks, including the Federal Reserve.
Damn.
Utilities, including nuclear power. And if I'm not mistaken, Henry Kissinger, if you don't know who he is, look him up.
Google
anybody.
It. War criminal.
There was that one guy. He was the one of the main nuclear physicists that helped create the atomic bomb. I can't remember his name.
Remember Oppenheimer?
Yes.
Yeah, I was. Yep. Yeah,
he was a part of it.
Yeah,
Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, George Bush Senior.
Yeah, and Junior too, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, actually, that Oppenheimer thing's kind of cool because I was reading like they had a whole, basically a meeting to discuss the creation of the atomic bomb or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, this is just...
Yeah, that's what I had seen in a documentary. I mean, these are all, like, very, very baseline facts to set the stage.
I mean, that's all we kind of have, though, is our baseline facts, because this is, you know, pure... Yeah,
that's all we're going to have. The rest is speculation, but...
No, I was going to say, it's really funny, like, I'm not saying I believe in this or whatever, but, like, man, what if right-wing lunatics and left-wing people were all correct all along? It's the oil businessmen and they're Satanists.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever.
What do you think goes on, and do you think it's as important as conspiracy theorists think it is, Zach?
What I think that happens there is just like what people say is, mm-hmm. you know, as it goes is... It's just a bunch of people going on a camping trip to get away from their stressful lives or whatever. And like, mm-hmm. it's a gentleman's club to get fucked up mm-hmm. all day long and piss in the woods. And mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons why they don't want women there, is because like dudes want to like piss in the woods wherever they're at in the 2,700 acres of fucking redwood trees. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a getaway place to like have conversations and just enjoy nature and like get the load off. But because it's so secluded and like they've had so many people like arrested for trespassing and stuff like that, I think it's I think that's what brought the edge to the public eye, is like
because of the magnitude of the people that show up, right?
The seclusion, like,
and the seclusion, yeah,
and women are not allowed. Like the California state tried to like fight the Bohemian Grove in court for to have women be in that club in small trial court,
mm-hmm.
and the court won, and then they went to like state court, like federal court or whatever.
Wow.
And then the federal court was like, no, it's a gentleman's club, they want to piss in the woods, just let them be boys, and then overruled. So they're still like, after however long, there's still no women allowed in this place.
Yeah, I mean,
that's weird.
That could drive even more speculation, the fact that the courts even allowed them to, but it's healthy to be skeptical, obviously.
Yeah. People are always skeptical of the unknown, and that's why it's such a interesting topic to talk about, is
because
we don't know that much. And mm-hmm. like what we do know is like what's online or people that have snuck in there before. And the resources are very fucking slim.
Yeah.
You get some shitty ass History Channel where like these people get arrested. It's like, like they break into the Bohemian Grove trying to get on the road, and then they end up taking like canoes or something, and then they get arrested like 30 seconds in mm-hmm. in the footage.
Yeah, that was such an I saw that one too. It's like one of the few documentaries on YouTube, because you know YouTube's community policies, you're not allowed to essentially talk about conspiracy theories. And that's the only one they left up, I think, probably because it was from the History Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Alex Jones, and then a bunch of, like, unknown people or not as well-known people that have broken in there, but they don't, like, have footage. It's just, like, documented facts of them breaking into it and getting arrested and, you know, like that one crazy dude I was talking about to you.
We'll talk about him a little later.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, Ashok, what do you think? Do you think it's as significant as conspiracy theorists make it out to be?
No, I mean, I basically take the same position as Zach. I'll mention this guy later. But
I was going to say that guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I agree. It's mostly like a place for people to leave. And again, like, even if they were like nefariously Satanistic or whatever, like, that stuff's BS anyway. Or it's just humanistic. It's not as, like, it's either going to be not as scary as people think, or it's just complete BS. So it's like,
yeah,
it's for them, you know, where they can just, you know,
I think of it as like the first Burning Man, like,
yeah, I
how
guess
it's
so
like
much.
Concerts, events, and people burning wood, like statued figures,
yeah,
except it's they're burning wood statue figures in front of a giant 20-foot fucking cement owl.
I mean like people have been doing rituals forever. I mean, just because like we live in an age where we're used to like, you know, common church rituals, like it's they have their own stuff. And like I have this thing pulled up, and I'll mention this. So their patron saint, or like their symbol, whatever, is John of Nepomuk, apparently, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's where they get the whole idea of Bohemian Grove, because he's a saint of Bohemia, right? And this might actually account for the whole lady thing too, because apparently he was drowned in the Vitava River at the behest of Venice Claus IV. Bohemia. And later accounts say that he was a confessor of the Queen of Bohemia and refused to divulge the secrets of the confessional. So he basically, like, he heard the confessions of this of the Queen, and he didn't tell anybody, and he got killed for it, I guess, right? So I guess in that way, that explains, that might give some symbolic reasoning for a lot of their practices. They don't allow women. I don't know, is it connected to the whole thing with the saint? Are they a secret because their patron saint is a guy who kept the secrets? Like, I don't even know.
Those are good connections.
I mean, maybe. I mean, it, maybe that...
That is a good... Yeah, I wonder if anybody ever thought about that, but I mean, leave it to the history major to...
Right. Well, yeah, a Wikipedia article. but, I mean, like, maybe. I mean, and then there's nothing here that I saw. Like, they're considered... Like, oh, yeah, yeah. So, like, however they... Yeah, I mean, they're not literally from Bohemia, but they seem to take, you know, symbols from Bohemian history. At least it seems like. So... I mean, they're just another random group, you know, with secret, you know, there are plenty of secret societies out there,
yeah.
You know.
I know there are ties to the Skull and Bone Society.
Yeah.
From New Haven, Yale. And the Skull and Bones has similar traditions, and they're a fraternity. Mm-hmm. So they do now allow women, if I'm not mistaken, but they didn't up until like 93 or something. So I mean, it's no shock to me that they still don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, a lot of the people that do go to these places, they're like, they are elites. Mm-hmm. And largely the elite class, they are male figures.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, I don't agree with that, but I mean, I understand why they're trying to keep it in within the gender, why mm-hmm. they would. I don't agree with that. These people, they do these things in broad daylight.
Yeah.
They don't need to go into the woods to do these things. That's my take on it.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't need to be like Satanists to be bad people or whatever like that. Like that's like, I mean, what if they are? Who cares? Like, they're already doing the damage on, you know, out in the daylight.
Exactly. Yeah. That doesn't answer any questions.
They're not Batman.
And if they were really that secret, I'm sure they would do a lot better job at keeping this stuff
for
hidden.
Sure.
Like, come on. You know what I mean? Like, why in a forest and not, like, in a bunker? You know, maybe they do, but why are they doing this? Like, come on. And then also, like...
I think it's just because of tradition. Because it started off with, like... what's this guy's name?
I mean, that's
Henry Harry Edwards.
Right.
And it was, like, basically a going-away party. Mm-hmm. He was moving to New York. And... He was like one of the first founding members of this, and they had an encampment at the Redwoods, and slowly over time, all of his other friends started buying the Redwood land, including himself and other people. So the encampment got larger and larger and larger. And after he wasn't showing up, even though he was a founding member, and like he said his farewells and went to New York or whatever, they still carried it out, and they did it every single year after he was gone.
Oh, I see. And so that is a tradition.
It's like a tradition, but the tradition grew more and more, and they bought land in the forest. So it's almost like an obligation to just keep going back every single year at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was probably just because they get fucked up drunk all day long. One guy was probably like, you know, we should do this every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then that turned into like almost like a habitual ritual.
Uh-huh.
Like, everyone's just like, yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, we'll come back mid-July and hang out for 4 weeks and get fucked up. And then more prominent people started getting involved with wealth, because you have to have cash to buy land and shit like that. So you have to have cash to buy a membership. This is all, well, half of it's like speculatory.
But but the country club culture is pretty common among upper class like that. So it's no shock. And this is like the culture or country club of all country clubs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But like going back to Kissinger and the thought that these people do these things in broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
They literally do. And you can look at Kissinger as the main perpetrator in that situation. Like, I mean, the Obama administration, the Bush administration, and pretty much every administration since Kissinger was involved with the government has consulted him on geopolitics, essentially, for the last 50, 60 years. They don't need to do it in the woods somewhere. I mean, and this is like brings up another question for me is, what do you think, both of you guys, what do you think is the purpose of these stories and among conspiracy theorists? What is the purpose that they get blown up to this point? Do you have a
Like, why do they blow it up kind of thing?
Yeah, why do you think they put so much importance and so much weight to theories like this? There is a reason why these things are blown up the way they are. And
it's because of...
I want to hear your take on why you think that is.
I think it's because they don't know a lot about it. It's very, like, secluded. And I think a lot of... people.
But why would they want to get to know? Why would they want to know more about it?
Because when you put a bunch of powerful, prominent people all in a group setting, your mind can do nothing but wonder what the hell they're talking about. Especially when they're not just from the United States; they're from like all around the world.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, that's the conversations that they have. You don't know, and you won't know.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're...
But why would you wonder about their conversations?
But that's the thing, though, is, like, even if, like, they're not doing anything crazy, it is still genuinely weird. Like, even if, like, you know, it's hard not to blow... I mean, like, for God's sake, there is an owl statue, you know? And like, we can chalk it up. I mean, like, we can chalk it up to, like, oh, there's a couple of... like, what kept coming up to my mind was, like, oh, there's a bunch of people who, like, go to nature in a transcendental kind of way, like let's go to Walden Pond and just relax for a little bit, because they're all like intellectual elitists, right? But like
they have clubs but lodges,
but you can't deny that it's weird. And like, even if, and I don't believe they are doing anything like, you know, like they engage in magic or something like that, but it's like it's
Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, they just play Magic the Gathering. It's like whatever, but like it's genuinely creepy. So like I feel like it's, out of any conspiracy theory, I think this is the one of the few ones where you can, I think there is a little bit of leeway into blowing it up a little bit, because it's still weird. And like, you can connect it with other stuff. Like, for example, the owl statue, right? People, like, take out your dollar, and I think it's on the top right, number one, there is a little owl or spider, whatever people say. It's a little owl thing, most likely there. I think it's an owl there. And it's like, wow, that's creepy. You know, and so it's like, and they worship an owl statue, and apparently it's called Moloch. Well, that's creepy. You know, it doesn't mean to mean anything, but it's like, it's still.
But what does Moloch mean?
Well, yeah, that's where I was confused. Moloch is supposed to be a demon in like Canaanite, ancient Canaanite stuff. A god. He's basically supposed to be a bull god that you sacrifice children to.
Yeah, but this Moloch's an owl.
Yeah, see, I thought the owl was supposed to represent Athena as like a goddess of wisdom kind of thing. I thought there was more symbology going on there. I don't know why they call this. I mean. Do they actually call it, this is the question though. Do they actually call it Moloch, or is it a conspiracy theorist who's an ultra right Christian nationalist who say they call it Moloch because they're trying to connect it with like demonology or whatever. Yeah.
Because they're
Satanists.
Yeah.
They're doing the, what is it called? Cremation of care.
I mean, that's a Moloch is actually a bull. It's not supposed to, it makes no sense if it was an owl.
You know what I think my take is on this?
What's that?
I think it's just a bunch of grown-up college frat boys that are doing the same shit that they do in college, like wearing robes and shit.
Yeah.
And, like, doing initiation.
These are educated people,
right?
Too. So you look at the people that... Obviously, there are educated people that are conspiracy theorists as well, but if we look at the general population of what a conspiracy theorist looks like, let's take Alex Jones, for instance, and his listeners. Mm-hmm. Probably not as educated as somebody who goes to the Bohemian Grove, likely because they didn't have the opportunity financially or whatever. So they're not going to understand this cultural symbolism like the owl or the robes. Mm-hmm. So to them, it's foreign.
Yeah.
But, and also the Latin roots of academia, all of that. And then following back up with what I was asking you, Zach, like, why do people care about what leaders say behind closed doors?
Because it might have, their conversations might have an effect afterwards and like broad daylight. Like
I think
you
they
guys
have had an effect.
Yeah.
Right.
Me too.
And currently in the current state of the world, like I don't think that people like what they're faced with.
Yeah.
So we look for answers when people especially like this go behind closed doors, because you think, oh, these people are public servants. Yeah. They're supposed to be transparent about what they do.
Yeah. So we're not going to find out on the news until it's like already out.
Yeah.
I feel like people are concerned because it's so enclosed, and like they feel like whatever conversations might take place there might affect their lives in like the near foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that it inevitably will, whether they go behind closed doors or not, because of the spectacle.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
The nature of how things are, we are controlled by these people's decisions largely, or at least our environment is. And then our environment is controlled by what these people are controlled by, which is largely the grand scheme of things, which is mass media, the economy, just this impenetrable desire for accumulation of wealth, etc., all of that, it all goes into this. But I don't think anything that goes on behind those closed doors won't happen in plain sight. And especially if you're going to be so focused on what goes on behind these closed doors, you have a, I guess, a duty. It's like another form of ethics where if you were to ask the train situation, like if you essentially there's 10 people on one side and then there's a single guy on the other side, and you have a right to...
You mean deontological?
Deontological, that's right.
Yeah.
So if you have a...
Being in the ethics class.
You have a deontological right. If you show any interest in what goes on behind these closed doors, you have to want to know what goes on in policy, too. And that's the thing that I think conspiracy theorists don't really pay attention to. They're all crazy about the mystique of what goes on in the Bohemian Grove, but they don't pay attention to what happens in plain sight.
Yeah, and most of the time, they, you know, considering the trend that they tend to be Republicans or whatever, they tend to support the policies that, whatever reason, those guys would probably most likely talk about in those clothes. I mean, for God's sake, there's Ronald Reagan. And there was actually, there's a video out there, I think I saw it like years ago when I was a kid, but it was like some guy confronts like Ronald Reagan, like, hey, or I think it was Ronald Reagan. They're like, hey, do you go to the Bohemian Grove or whatever? He's like, was it him or was it? It might have been Bill Clinton, actually, now that I think about it. I forget who it was, but I think it was actually Bill Clinton. But he says, like, oh, that's where all the Republicans go or something like that. So it's like, yeah, I mean, they end up voting against their interests or whatever. But, like, I also think like there's a massive level of like anti-Semitism. Like a couple of...
I was going to bring that up to the New World Order.
Yeah, New World Order. And, like, what I'm thinking about is, like, for example, like, Nazi... You know, I don't know if I should talk about this, like, on a podcast word, but like, you know, like Nazi Germany, you know, they'd
Let
be
rip.
Yeah, they'd be like, oh man, you know, like the West, you know who they're controlled by,
the Wild West,
you know, like, oh, you know where they're who are like the Marxist Soviet Jewish, you know, whatever, right? There's a thing going on, they're doing all this and that, meanwhile they're having their own secret meetings with, like, you know, esoteric fascists, you
and
know,
cloaks.
Things. So it's like, really, the ones who are making these claims, they're the ones that are kind of in that spiritual, you know, goo-goo water, you know?
It's the ones that tend to fall into the trap of believing things like cutting taxes for corporations because of laissez-faireism and all of that.
Yeah.
Because they think that it's the free market and whatever, and it's like, or the free market should be taking over, when in reality, that's what's taking everybody's paycheck away is the free market when you cut these taxes, because who else is going to pay when we're the ones getting paid and corporations aren't? And then they can point the finger at, you know, Jews in this case because of their anti-Semitic beliefs, largely.
I mean, like,
or these, the banks.
Yeah, these guys don't need to have, like, a spiritual, ethnic motivation to want money. No, they want money because they want money and they're in the power to get the money. You know, like, it's not, you know, again, it's like, it's such an extra step to just declare some sort of, like, mystical, like, nefarious reasons. Like, let's just have an Occam's razor. No, they're just greedy guys who... I mean, there's a thing...
like to hang.
That's probably another thing, too.
It's like, if you're that wealthy and if you can wipe your ass with a $100 bill every day and it still won't fucking affect you, wouldn't you want to hang out with other people that are like that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there would be a disconnect between the rest of society.
Exactly. Like, you'd want to meet your equal across from the table, like, whether they're from a fucking third world country or not.
Right.
You know? If they're in a position of power just like you are, and they want a vacation just like you do, then go to the Bohemian Grove.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're just going to get fucked up all day. Another thing, too, like, women are allowed there during the daytime. They just got to leave the premises between, like, 9:30 and 10 o'clock.
And children, right?
Yeah, and children. But that's if you're a member and, like, you go there for, like, you can, like, book events there and shit. Not when they're doing their four-week encampment or whatever the fuck. But any time during the year besides that time. Like, if you're a member, you can schedule an appointment just like anywhere else and be like, oh, I want to bring my kids and my wife. I'm going to come down to the place. But by the time it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock, I don't know why, but like, children and women got to go. The guy can still stay there, but the family has to leave.
Interesting.
That in itself, I think, is kind of fucking strange. But I think it's because there's not even supposed to be women there at all. And that's like the leeway that they have. They're like, oh, we'll let them hang out there from
8 a.m. until 10, and then they got to get the fuck off the premises because that's the rules.
I don't know how it goes. Yeah. I'm not for it. To me, I think it's kind of like a little weird and suspicious, but that's also my logic, too, is like, well, they're not even supposed to be members, mm-hmm. and they fought it so many times since when? 1878?
Yeah.
It's a long fucking time to not have women in a club. There's got to be a reason for it. I don't know what it is. I'm not a part of the Bohemian Grove, so I'll never know.
A lot of the people, like in when they were trying to get the Skull and Bone Society to incorporate women into the group,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the alumni and a lot of the, I guess, sexist members were against it. So they literally had to vote on it like two separate times.
Wow.
And barely got it passed. Now they can be. So I think it's probably the same situation. Like, the older members are still sexist,
yeah,
or whatever, so they don't allow women. Or maybe they do, because how do we know they don't if we are not aware of anything?
That's another thing.
It's like, we don't know if they allow women or not if we don't know anything about the group.
Yeah.
Maybe at the time they didn't.
There's also the employees, too, that work there and manage the property all year long. Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, if they deny women. But again, that's also another thing is like, we say we don't know too much about the group, but we kind of do. It's like, you know.
We do, but we don't. We do from an outside standpoint, like, and all the factual basis that's on, like, fucking Wikipedia or Alex Jones or
Wikipedia.
The fucking dude that dressed up as Batman that broke into the place.
But what I was saying is, like, it's for a secret society, boy, they're Batman. Not that secret. You know what I mean?
Not at all. Like, yeah. I think there's less known about what the Freemasons do.
Right.
Really, you can call the Bohemian Grove right now. There's a number.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we'll do that later on.
Maybe.
We should take a break. We're,
we've been writing this.
Up next, Metallica, Fade to Black.
No, I'm just joking.
We will be back.
Hello, we are back with Our Thoughts Tonight.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
Okay. All right, so there's like Alex Jones who broke in, who's like the most prominent that people know about that broke into the Bohemian Grove. But there's also this guy that I never heard of until I started like doing some research.
I had never heard about this either. So yeah. I haven't seen anything about this on like a lot of the research too. So
yeah, but this guy's name's Richard McCaslin. He was born June 20th, 1964, and died in 2018. He was a former Marine, a cosplayer. He was a Batman stuntman and a convicted felon.
Oh, word.
But this guy would, he developed a real-life superhero identity called the Lynx in 1985, and he patrolled Zanesville with a teenage sidekick named Iron Claw. Real shit. McCaslin would develop more personas over the years. He went on to live in Austin, Texas, and Las Vegas, Nevada. He was described as a avid fan of country music singer Shirley White in 2001. He attended charity events, and he basically was a stalker of her, okay?
He actually sounds incredibly familiar. I don't think I know this kid, but I think I know someone like him.
But later on in life, he became, like, his vigilante name was called the Phantom Patriot.
Oh, I know about this guy. Yeah.
And on January 19, 2002, McCaslin attempted to raid the Bohemian Grove campground while dressed as the Ego, the Phantom Patriot. He had been concerned about a ritualistic child sacrifice taking place at the Bohemian Grove after seeing the documentary film's Dark Secrets Inside Bohemian Grove by the host Alex Jones, who I just mentioned.
Right.
He planned to burn the massive owl statue, believing it to be a Canaanite god, Moloch.
Yeah.
Associated with child sacrifice. So he thought kids were getting burnt there, like, by government officials and, like, powerful people.
Is that why he became a felon, or was he a felon beforehand?
He probably was a felon beforehand. I don't know. But he met up directly with Alex Jones about Bohemian Grove, but said he made no indication of his plans to the host.
Wow.
While wearing a skull mask and a blue jumpsuit with the Phantom Patriot written red on his chest, he entered the campground armed with a pump-action rifle, shotgun hybrid, a 45 caliber handgun, a crossbow, a 2 foot long sword, a knife, and fireworks mortar tube.
Wow.
He entered the camp in winter and found that the camp was deserted except for some staff. He discovered he was going to burn the fucking owl down, right? This is his plan all along. He's like, I'm going in. It's winter. I'm going to burn the owl down.
Isn't it concrete?
Yeah. And then he gets there and he finds out the owl's made of concrete instead of redwood, as he had believed. It cannot be destroyed. So he got mad and he kicked in some fucking lodge door, passed out.
Oh my gosh.
And he slept in it overnight. The following morning, he set a fire in an empty banquet hall, which turn triggered an alarm. He encountered a caretaker, Fred Yeager, and maintenance Bob Hipkiss. That's a weird fucking name. But no guests were present. Upon leaving the grounds, McCaskill pointed his MK1 rifle at Yeager as he sat in the security booth, believing the phone Yeager held to be a gun. He encountered law enforcement officers that surrounded his truck and was later removed following a tense armed standoff. He later claimed in correspondence to author Tia Krulos that his thoughts were slim possibility of Shelley Wright, the chick that he was stopping, again kept him from turning violent. McCaskill was briefly held at a mental health ward in how you say that? Sonoma County Jail?
Sonoma County, yeah.
Yeah. He was later convicted of felony charges of arson, burglary, brandishing, and weapon at peace officer, 2 counts of being armed or wearing a bulletproof vest. He was imprisoned in California. He was released in 2008, and he went to fucking... Where did he go? Oh, yeah, this is funny as shit. He became a devotee of British conspiracy theorist David Icke, included Reptoid Lizards. Hypothesis.
Yeah.
The several prominent politicians are, in fact, extraterrestrial beings of the offspring of such beings with humans in disguise.
I used to read a lot of David Icke.
Yeah. And
you really?
June 28, 2011, using the name Thought Crime, another alias for his vigilante names, he protested outside the Alcoa plant in Davenport, Iowa, where Barack Obama was speaking, and accused Obama, as well as Bush's, the Clintons, and others, being blue bloods, reptoid human hybrids.
Huh.
And then he died. He, in October 15, 2018, he attempted suicide. Police found McCaskill suffering from a head injury in his truck, parked in an alley next to the house of the temple. And he was pronounced dead the following day.
Wow.
I'm sure there's conspiracies about his death now.
There has to be.
It's always suicide.
He's got a gouge in the back of his head in an alleyway next to a temple.
I mean, like, I'm sure he... I don't know. That's my God.
But it seems like this guy dressed up as a vigilante, fucking up people and, like, getting into all of the wrong places at all of the wrong times.
Yeah.
He went to, like, an Arkham Asylum.
But this is what I'm talking about. It's like, this is why people like this get, like, banned off YouTube. Because they end up taking a gun and taking some weapons and, like...
Taking it too seriously.
Too seriously.
One of those internet nuts.
Oh, my God.
He's not Bruce Wayne. He doesn't got fucking computers and shit.
Yeah,
this guy was a real-life Batman stuntman. Like, he was a stuntman. Yeah, he was a stuntman for Batman.
That's crazy.
I mean, like, let's make this, like, completely
clear. In the 60s. So, it's got to be Adam West, right?
It's literally Adam West.
It's got to be Adam West stuntman.
Right.
That's who this guy is, who broke into the Bohemian Grove, lit lodges on fire, had a standoff with officers, got arrested, pronounced insane, gets out, thinks people are fucking reptiles, and then in 2018 he decides to hang himself. I can't take it anymore, that's just one story that stems outside of the shit, and I think that's also what makes the Bohemian Grove so interesting.
Yeah.
It's because of all of the other little stories that you hear that come out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I knew about Alex Jones. It was like, oh, he broke in 2000 with a camera. That's cool. Oh, you see the fire of them burning wood.
Yeah.
Woohoo. In front of an owl. But this guy fucking went in full force and met up with Alex Jones, but didn't tell him his intentions and didn't tell him his plans. That's crazy.
I wonder what would have happened if he did tell him, if Alex Jones would have told him not to do it or what. I don't know how Alex Jones got away with that.
I don't know either.
Maybe he's controlled opposition.
Alex Jones said that he got death threats and shit, too.
maybe.
I bet. Yeah.
Isn't there a thing where Alex Jones goes to one like politician and he's like, don't you go to the Bohemian Grove? And then the guy starts acting really defensive and weird.
It's the, what's his name? The,
I know you're talking
not
about.
The Rockefeller, the one of the Rothschilds, I believe. Maybe. And he's just like, he turns around, like, walks away aggressively. Like
yeah, and like, but I guess the larger point, let's make this clear. Like, these are people who have not made a lot of their lives who end up finding going down this rabbit
hole. I think it's Senator Marco Rubio.
Oh, no.
Oh, that one too. That's another one.
So funny, but yeah, that's another one.
So it's like these are people who have not made a lot of much of their lives. They fall down this rabbit hole. They probably need fucking therapy and they engage in this shit. And this is like this is the same kind of stuff that led to January 6th.
It's like 100%.
You know, like, and again, the Bohemian Grove is creepy.
Right. But yeah, so they need mental health.
Yeah, they really. And again, like, I'm not blaming them. Bohemian Grove is creepy. Like, again, there was an owl there. Like, they were in robes. It's weird. Sure, buddy. But it's like,
If you got an invitation to go to the Bohemian Grove, would you go?
Nah, it's a waste of time.
I would totally go.
I would go.
100%.
If someone invited me and I didn't even have the money, they're like, well, I'll front you. I'd go.
I would want to know up front if I was going to be part of the sacrifice or something.
Yeah, like what's going to happen once I go?
Yeah. As long as I wasn't, I would be there for sure. I would be making some undercover deals.
Yeah. As long as there's no child sacrificing or anything like that, I'm all for it. I just want to see what it's about. If all the conspiracy theorist things are just a crock of shit because they probably can't get into the club.
Again, it's like a frat thing. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. It's like a frat thing. It's camping with your buddies. I think of it as adult creepy Boy Scouts.
Oh man, look at our ancient
Greek
symbol.
We're going to piss on an onion and you have to
eat
it whole.
Our group is called Filetto or something like that. It's it's creepy. But
there's going to dude's toe, dude.
You know, shag each other and drink some booze.
There's these things this is really popular in American culture.
It's fucking weird.
The boys. Scouts, fraternities,
Eagle
things
Scouts.
Like that, you know, and it's for, I think largely I'm making a theory I'm coming up with as we're talking about this. A lot of this is weird because we live in such an individualist society. So when you see people gathering and having, you know, traditions and whatnot, it is abnormal, especially when it is, you know,
the magnitude
owls
it is.
And the magnitude of the people and then the robes. All the imagery, it is kind of strange because we don't, being a part of a group, if it's not a book club, is kind of strange in America.
In America, for sure, because in Europe, for example, you kind of have this stuff all over the place. Oh man, the Livonian Order of Knights, that's nothing crazy. It's a weird group, right? Or in France, people are awarded with the Legion of Honor. That goes back to Napoleonic France stuff. It's these weird groups, and even in Japan, there's societies like that. It's that's just how it is in other countries, or at least in European influence countries. But with America, right, it's you do have some elements of that still existing, the Grove or whatever. But over on the surface level, it's not like that. And I'm actually going to tie it back to what I mentioned with transcendentalism and the early American pragmatic movements. It's this entire idea of individualism, but also this return to nature kind of thing, you know? So it's first of all, no wonder we're weirded out by groups, and no wonder these groups go out to nature and do stuff like that, you know? It's just, even the founding fathers can be considered a fraternity club in a weird way. George Washington was a Freemason. So what? You know what I mean? So what?
All right, topic change. I mentioned this to you guys earlier. Norwegian black metal band Mayhem has a song called Corpse of Care, which seems to describe the cremation of care ritual. It appears on their 2014 album.
Oh, it's their new album, huh? So, we'll take a quick break, and because it's in the light of this topic, we'll play that Mayhem song. Okay.
All right, and remember to check us out on Twitter at Kruchim Sanctum. That will be in our description of this episode.
Kruchim Sanctum.
We are back on Our Thoughts Tonight, everybody.
That was some good old black metal right there.
Mayhem. We are continuing on with the Bohemian Grove, but we're going to kind of take a left turn here. And I want to ask you guys a question. What do you think of the recent military acknowledgement of UFOs, which they are now calling UAPs, I believe.
Oh, I did not hear about this. What's going? What?
I didn't.
You
hear
didn't
about
hear
this.
About it?
No.
Nah.
All right.
Where'd you hear about?
I'm
this?
Too.
Because I pay attention to the news.
Okay.
It was all over the news like a month ago. Okay.
The news.
I don't pay attention to the news anymore.
3 days ago, Congress calls for permanent UAP office. I mean, it's apparently such a big deal that Congress is starting a permanent UAP.
What does
office.
UAP stand for? Unidentified.
Unidentified aerial phenomena.
Aerial phenomena.
So that's I'm gonna dope. Pull this
that's
up
a better
here.
Term.
New acronyms.
Yeah.
It's 2021.
That doesn't necessarily mean they're aliens. I mean, like, people forget
exactly.
that UFO doesn't mean alien. It just means unidentified flying object. Now it's unidentified.
Could be fucking Iron Man for all
definitely.
We know.
Right. Yeah.
It says.
Honestly, it's probably like a Russian jets
it's
or
probably
something.
Some sort of satellite
or something.
Something.
Yeah.
Or maybe like a missile launch test or something that we don't know.
Yeah.
About.
Yeah.
So it says in December 2017. The United States Department of Defense confirmed the existence of a defense program used to collect data on military UFO sightings. Despite the disbandment of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program in 2012, like its predecessor program, Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, in collaboration with the Office of Naval Intelligence, after the June 2020 Senate hearing, Senator Marco Rubio requested the release of video footage of unexplained aerial vehicles collected by the United States Navy, including the Pentagon UFO videos. On June 24, 2020, Intelligence Committee voted to require U.S. intelligence community and the U.S. Department of Defense to publicly track and analyze data collected on unexplained aerial vehicles. Anyway, so they released a video. It says on April 12th, 2021, the Pentagon confirmed the authenticity of pictures and videos gathered by the task force. What appears to be pyramid-shaped objects hovering above USS Russell in 2019 off the coast of California. With spokesman Susan Goh saying, "I can confirm that the reference photos and videos were taken by Navy personnel. The UAPTF has included these incidents in their ongoing examinations." And I watched the footage. It's pretty fucking crazy.
Really?
Yeah. It's all over the internet.
I'll take a look at this. Again, it could be, you know, we shouldn't chalk it up to aliens. I'll say this, though. It is weird.
Do you believe in aliens?
No, I do. See, I have, like, 3 points to make. One, it's weird that we just recently got a Space Force. It's a little weird. Number two, there is like military technology the U.S. has that we don't know about. I mean, it's the whole point of having secret military technology. I'm sure other countries are doing something like that. Just point number two. And point number three, even if they're aliens, what makes you think they're like
interested in us?
Well, that, but also like we're viewing them as like such humanistic like tendencies, you know, like, oh, because we have, you know, rocks that fly into space and planes, they must have something similar. No, this is something that like, you know, a new age weirdo person would say, but like, what if they're nothing that we can comprehend? Like, what if they don't need space? Or like, what if they like have some sort of access to like wormholes and they can just without planes or whatever, right? I'm just making shit up at this point, but it's like,
what if they're the reason why we're
anthropomorphizing aliens?
What if we're just fucking hamster experiments?
They hate our freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just like, let's just watch these people destroy themselves. We'll cause hurricanes and earthquakes and tsunamis and watch from afar. Then every now and then we'll pop up unannounced so they can fucking freak out on their news.
Yeah. I think I mentioned this in the episode a long time ago, but like Neil deGrasse Tyson, which I kind of hate these days. But like,
oh my God. You say that every time you introduce Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I just don't like that guy anymore.
You're like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who I watched a 45-minute documentary on, but I hate.
Yeah.
But let me clarify.
He had this thing where he's like,
cool.
Sometimes. I mean, he said this though. That was cool.
I like his hair and his mustache.
Yeah, yeah. He's a stylish. He's a stylish guy.
I feel like he'd be a cool teacher.
Sure. He had some sexual deviance going on recently.
I did not hear, but I can believe that.
So what did he say?
Oh, he was basically like, he was basically comparing like, oh man, like, what if creating a rocket ship for aliens is like basic drawings, like that, like for example, like he's based on about like the difference in intelligence between us and like chimpanzees is like the difference of like 1% of like DNA, right? And that to us seems like a lot. What if aliens had a 1% difference? In that sense, us building rocket ships might just be like hobbies their children have or something like that. Yeah. Like we have to, we can't really,
like in science class when we build rockets.
Yeah, it's like, but exactly, but like to them, like actual rockets is like child's work or whatever.
This is child's play.
Yeah, the whole point is like we can't really talk about, you know, things that we don't really know exist in anthropomorphic frameworks, you know, like
definitely.
What if they're completely like we just cannot comprehend them? Like, for example, I would more likely believe in an alien in a sense of like mind, like weird psychedelic DMT. I'd rather much believe in aliens like that than like some gray thing walking around like a saucer, you know, like. We're anthropomorphizing aliens. We don't really know what the fuck an alien is. Like, you know? Yeah.
Here's another one. What are your thoughts?
Our thoughts.
What are your thoughts on 9/11 conspiracies?
Oh, man. It's a few days after. Wow.
I think it was a demolition.
You do?
Yeah. Because of the way that the building collapsed, I think they were like, oh, we're going to build new things here. And then just like fucking... But I don't really know.
I don't think that.
It's all speculatory.
I think, again, it's one of those things where it's like, we don't need the conspiracy to, like, understand the consequences of it. Like, it's, I do believe that the entire situation was mishandled and,
oh, for sure.
And like, there was, if I remember correctly, I haven't done as much research as I should, but it's like,
what are the chances?
I think we were expecting something to happen and we just weren't giving a crap or someone else. Yeah. I don't think it was intentional or whatever, but like by Bush did it or whatever. But
I didn't think it was intentional when the first plane crashed.
Yeah.
All right. The reason why I think it's intentional is because what are the fucking chances of two planes crashing into the shit?
It was one plane though.
I thought it was two.
No, it was one.
Two planes.
Was it two planes? No.
One in each tower.
That's what
I'm sure about that?
100%.
Yeah.
Am I like, did I really forget about it?
Well, maybe. I don't know. You were young. Getting struck, the first tower, there's only like one piece of footage about it.
Yeah.
There's one tower in each.
But there was two planes.
One plane in each tower, yes.
And that's what I'm saying.
And then one in Pennsylvania in the ground. And then those one ones in the Pentagon.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. It's kind of it's planned. Like, it's intentional.
It was intentional.
It was planned.
Not by the U.S. government.
I don't know if it was done by the U.S. government or not, but it seems like it was intentional for sure. It wasn't coincidental.
No, definitely no coincidence.
Because there's no fucking way in hell that, like, an airplane could be like, oh, no, I'm off track.
No,
I'm crashing.
Yeah, no one's claiming that.
Then
no
another
one's
one.
They made 180 turns to get to where they needed.
No, yeah. No, there's always the intention. So like,
probably at
who's making it? Yeah.
They hijacked, they stabbed and killed the pilots. But yeah, so in terms of the physics of the building, that's what people point to. Like, planes have never brought down skyscrapers. And it's like, yeah, you're right in the past, but that's because skyscrapers in the past have been made up by completely steel frames, on
Didn't
all four sides
steel frames,
and
though?
In the middle. They did, but in a totally different way. There was exterior steel frames, and then there was one interior column through the middle of it, which also created the elevator, because these were designed differently so that the interior column had the main section of the steel frames, because that allowed the rest of the building to be open.
Yeah.
And then it had the reassurance of the exterior of what we see in the photos, that those steel columns, they kind of look like Gothic architecture if you look at it, because that's what they're based on.
Yeah.
And it was a new design. And yeah, that's why that happened, because those center columns, eventually after burning for 2 hours at like incredibly hot heat
temperatures,
they didn't melt steel beams. You don't need to melt them. Once steel reaches 500 Fahrenheit, I believe, it starts to lose its strength.
So
got concrete being held up by those, and then boom.
Yeah, and you crashed a fucking plane into it.
Yeah, you crashed a plane into it with jet
fuel. You already ruined
all of the contents of the tower itself.
The plane's fucking burning.
Yeah, the plane,
the
fuselage.
Impact of it.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff the fuselage is made of is also chemicals.
I guess you could call it like domino effect.
100%.
I've heard people have like theories of like whoever crashed into it could have set up, like, it was obviously intentional, right? But there's theories that, like,
People set up like C4 or some shit, like bombs on each every other level or something for it to like collapse right after the plane fucking crashed into it. That is a plausible idea. If you put four bombs on every other level, like unnoticed, and time it after a plane crashes.
You gotta have people setting that up. They have to do it you know, you can't be caught on surveillance.
But it's also like, why though? I mean, like, what people...
You fucking dressed up as a janitor. The plane got hijacked. Yeah. That's not like a... TSA didn't step up until after that shit happened.
Of course. That was also a factor of where America was at that point in time. They were like, they were so secure that nothing like that could have happened.
And then you could
walk up to a gate up until that day.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. Like, when people talk about like it being like intentional about the American government, the whole idea is that, oh, they planned this so they could execute whatever, invasion of Iraq, Afghanistan, TSA, you know, Patriot Act, whatever, right? Oh, all these horrible things happened after 9/11, so they must have caused 9/11. First of all, that's a huge fallacy. And two, like, they start to point to, like, the Operation Northwood conspiracy theory, quote-unquote, where, like, it's an actual thing where the American government planned a fake... I forget what it was. It was basically the planning of a fake accident or whatever involving Cuba to have an excuse to invade Cuba, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that stuff is real, and so they point to that, but it's like, they really didn't need to bomb, like, a very important... two very important buildings to initiate a casus belli against Iraq.
Like that.
It's whatever, right? You don't need that insane of a thing. It's like, wow, they must be so creative. No, it makes no sense. Like I mean, and again, they're in the, okay, and they were also gonna go and hit the Pentagon. Like what? Like it doesn't hold up. I mean, the consequences of it are bad. No, for sure, they didn't handle that well at all. But like to say it was like intentional by the American government, it's like, so what? If it was, it doesn't really make a difference. And it doesn't really make sense if they did.
No.
When me and you went to New York and we stood where the World Trade Center stood us, you could like feel it in the air. Like
that's
even now after all of those years. Like you're there and like
you know what went down.
And you know what went down and it's just like giant funeral essentially when you're walking in that side of town. Like it looks nice now. It's like
it's all quiet
and it looks beautiful and there's new architecture things and that's great. And like, but it's like one of those places, especially if you have knowledge of something eerie happened, the eeriness stays there.
The crazy thing is we never planned to go there. We just walked there. We were like, holy shit.
Yeah, we got stuck in a fucking cab for like an hour and a half and then we're like, fuck this, let's walk. And we went to Battery Park.
A direction and then like we looked in front of us and we're like, boom, we're in front of the World Trade Center. And we're like, oh my God.
We walked across like two streets and we're there.
It was so cool. But
it was also like, it felt weird.
It was weird. I wish I could have focused on it a little more because I don't know, but I remember, but it was just like, it was pretty crazy.
There's that one Onion skit where, you know how like, they have a new World Trade Center building or whatever? Mm-hmm. There's this Onion skit where they're like, I remember when that building was like taking forever to be built and the skit's basically like an American guy and then like an Al-Qaeda representative and they're both like complaining about how the building is being taken forever to be completed. And the Al-Qaeda guy's like, is being forever to be completed, man? I mean, we're trying to do stuff here. Like, they're planning to do another 9/11 or whatever.
Wow.
That's fucked.
It's Onion. It's an Onion skit. But it's funny we were mentioning this. Did we talk about Baudrillard's 9/11 stuff?
We didn't talk about it on the Hyper Reality because I didn't really know much about Baudrillard.
Yeah, I mean, all
ever since that episode.
Who's Baudrillard?
The guy we talked about, that Hyper Real stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know you read that thing. The only thing I know about what he says about 9/11 is that like supposedly it is all symbolic postmodern stuff, but like the two buildings are supposed to represent the fake equality of a capitalism, how you have two seemingly equal monopolies over a wide array of other buildings, and it's even the architecture of it is supposed to be symbolic for monopolies basically,
right?
And I think this is before 9/11 happened, but you read the actual whatever it was.
Actually
this was written post 9/11. It's not even about the Twin Towers, but
I think he wrote it like around the time after it happened.
Right.
Are you talking about what he said in the spirit of terrorism?
I don't know. I mean, the thing I was talking about with the buildings, I think that was written before 9/11 about the Twin Towers.
Oh, yeah. Which I you haven't read heard that different. One. You yeah. told me about it. But also, there's other symbolism that's talked about in the spirit of terrorism where symbolic exchange is mentioned, which now we're getting into postmodern shit.
Everything's postmodern.
All right. You want me to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're talking about 9/11, so.
Oh, man. This has got to be, like, I've been so obsessed with it in the last, like, week. Ever since that episode, I've read so much about postmodern.
Yeah.
Well, it started off with Baudrillard, but then now I'm getting into other things. But I think I'm going to go, like, full bore on
postmodern. Oh, yeah. I knew Baudrillard would get you on, like, this.
It's so good. I mean, I always felt that way, but it's not necessarily, like, an answer to my problems or anything. But it's, like, so Socratic, but it's, like, 21st century Socratic thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
the postmodernism is, yeah.
So Baudrillard, and I don't know line for line, so if I do get this wrong, feel free to message us on Twitter.
Or fact check.
He essentially says that 9/11 was the most symbolically potent event since the crucifixion of Christ for many reasons. One, because we've entered into the, I believe, I think he calls it like the fourth realm or fourth time. I don't know what it is. It's essentially
the fourth kind
it's
from
essentially
the fifth dimension.
The spectacle, pretty much, yeah. And I'll talk to you about that later because I was thinking about it. But
it
anyway.
Sounds like his fourth thing of hyper reality because we're into fourth stage of his hyper real stuff.
Exactly, that's what it is. Yeah. So because we in America at that point and still currently were in the fourth stage, we were pretty much at this point, or we are pretty much at this point, unaware of death because death in reality only takes away from life. And what is life? But you know, consumption, because if you look at all advertising, it's geared to the consumer, and to consume in those advertisements means to thrive, to live. So in any way, shape, or form, death for us is only a distraction and only taking away from our life, which has to do about consumption. The Al-Qaeda, on the other hand, death to them is still symbolic because they're in like the first order, I believe, of that hyper reality or of this spectacle.
Yeah, I think it's different stages, but I think the stages that I'm talking about are different than these stages. But whatever, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
So yeah, he says that, and then he says that they essentially over time with all the involvement with the Mujahideen and then like Cold War and then the siphoning of the minerals and all of the elements that part of the world provides, with the siphoning of that by America, it eventually led to these people becoming so frustrated, plus the lack of support for Palestine, et cetera. But they couldn't beat the United States through economic means. They couldn't beat them through military means. So what they instead did was they did what they had to because they were backed into a corner, and that is attack us symbolically. So they attacked us, the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers, which symbolically stood for capitalism, symbolically stood for our economy, our financial industry. They attacked the Pentagon, which stood for our military, which also another, you know, main tenet of their hate, essentially. And then you have the thing that stood out most to me, which I thought was like Baudrillard's most powerful analysis of this, was that they also took into account that the media, they used our media as a weapon against us.
Yeah.
Because they knew that by doing this, the media would repeatedly play this over and over. And literally every time they played it over and over, that was a victory for them.
Yeah, you couldn't switch the channel without it.
Still today?
They engage
every,
in hyper-reality.
Every 9/11... Every time it's 9/11 and a new year, whether it's broadcasted on fucking live news or not, it is embedded in the people that are aware of it. It's like embedded in our thoughts and our subconscious.
Yeah.
And when 9/11 hits, that's all you think about is that plane fucking hitting those towers.
And he also talks
those planes
about
hitting
that.
Those towers.
He also talks about that too. What was it?
Oh, that kind of ends with I think I mentioned the Baudrillard episode where like. He talks about, like, this, I forget, I think it was in the Gulf War, where, like, they kept showing the same American bombing of something over and over again, and it portrays, like, America constantly winning. So it's, like, the reverse of this. You're constantly showing 9/11. Not that 9/11 was happening over and over again, but it's, like, the symbolism of
the
actual...
The act of it.
Yeah, it's, like, it keeps happening or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, like, to remind you that, like...
He would say from a Freudian point of view... it's like it it reminds us of our death drive, if I'm not mistaken. But then he goes on to say something along the lines of, with the symbolic exchange, the exchange of gifts, he likens it to that. Not necessarily that the planes or the attack were a gift in the sense of like, oh, here's a gift for you. But in the sense that whenever you give a gift to somebody, they have to, whether they want to or not, respond to that gift. If they even if they don't respond, that is a response because that's the nature of communication. So in this case, they gave us a response, or they gave us a gift in the non-jolly way, and we had to respond. And whether they knew this or not, but the reality of the fact was, regardless of what we did, if we turned around and attacked them in any way, shape, or form, it would never be symbolically as
what they did
catastrophic as that. And they knew that because they know that our game plan is much different because we can't actually show the slaughter on our end because that would make us inhumane. Yeah. So they use that against us in theory. And he said, Beaugerard says that essentially our response, our true response should have been, and he pulls this from Nietzsche's idea of like mercy, essentially. He says, if we truly were the world power that we say we are, we would stop and realize, okay, these people are our parasites on our body. And what are my parasites to me but nothing? And we just brush them off and move on with our life, in essence, to show mercy. And to truly show that we are the most powerful, we would forgive. Mm-hmm. But he knows we can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that might lead to some other conspiracies about like who, I mean like
I'm about to lean,
no,
son.
Maybe not. Sorry, conspiracies. That was so long. No, yeah, but I get that. Great. It's like what's the next like the next boogeyman after the Soviets, you know?
The boogeyman?
Yeah, like you know.
Yeah.
Our big time enemy was Soviet Union, okay.
Our nemesis.
Yeah, like a period
big
of like
time.
Ten, yeah, you have like a period of 10 years where it's like, okay, we don't really have a boogeyman. It's like, oh, you know, it's I mean, again, that might go to conspiracies, but like that, yeah, that's, we couldn't have, you know. I actually don't know what America should have done at that point. I mean, definitely not what we did.
And then let's fast forward to now.
I guess it's symbolically. Yeah,
what's happening now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, president pulled them out. Last fucking, what, three presidents or four presidents should have done?
Three, yeah. I think.
Three?
Yeah. Yep.
And now he's taking the blame for it.
There's
blame.
There's plenty of blame to go around.
Plenty of blame to go around, but you know they're going to blame him because he's the current president. And he's the one that made the choice to do it.
Right.
But there's a lot of catastrophe happening over there, and this is something that happened a long time ago.
I mean, that's a really interesting point. That like what should have been done is basically nothing or little.
But now it's like it's coming unfolded.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like there's no border there anymore.
Also, what are the effects of that now?
Yeah.
That's what we've yet to find out, too. And then, not just on us, but on the Afghani people. I was listening to Chomsky the other day, just like 3 days ago, talking about this. He's like, if you, he said in his like very Chomsky, like 90-year-old way, he's like, well, if you look at the news coverage on it, it's mainly on how did this affect us, but how did this affect the Afghani people is what we should really be asking.
I mean, this is just a shot in the dark, but like what you can maybe interpret is like, not only did you have a symbolic nature of 9/11 showing like, okay, maybe America is actually vulnerable, right? And then you have this really harsh reaction, maybe justifiably so, from America, like boom. I wouldn't say justifiable in a sense of invading country that had nothing to do with it, but like, you know, really aggressive, you know, Patriot Act, invasion of Iraq, Afghanistan, all this stuff, right? Everything failed. Like, you know, Iraq was a mess. We kind of won the war, but then like everything went to crap, and then ISIS, whatever, and then Afghanistan, we're leaving. It's like, not only is there the, like the symbolic nature of like America is vulnerable of 9/11, but now it's like, okay, even the reaction of American failed. Like, if anything, this is my shot in the dark, but, like, this might bolster, like, nationalist or, you know, sentiments or, like, or stuff like that in the Middle East. Like, maybe less anti-Americanism and more, hey, we're going to actually take care of ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, or, like, hey, like, they just did all this stuff and it didn't really do much. I mean, it didn't stop.
It protected people.
Well, it did, but it's also failed.
I feel like is, like, ever since that airplane impacted on the fucking two towers, or airplanes impacted on the two towers, since then, it's just been like a branch of events that's happened and has branched out even more.
Oh, yeah.
And not in a good way.
No, no, of course not. I mean, like, in Iraq, the eventual failure from that is the creation of ISIS. And then in Afghanistan, you really have just basically a return, you know, a failure to really deal with the Taliban, right? And it's like America overall failed, you know, completely. So it's like, it's not just America's vulnerable, but America is effectively weak, or at least it's, maybe it's a geopolitical situation where they can't do much as it, they want to, but
did
it's
they
like,
fail though?
They did.
I mean, did they fail though?
America?
Like, yeah.
For sure they
no,
failed.
I mean, like, do you know what goals they went there to go well, and that, do that's, and succeed?
That's
a good point.
You know what I mean?
It depends on what like, point of view.
It depends on what America's goals are when they're going into that situation.
If we're
and
looking
did they
at the
succeed?
Goals that we but, think they were but, trying to
yeah,
accomplish.
They accomplished
but,
them.
Well, let's write a few goals down. Take care of Saddam. Okay, Saddam is gone, right? Yeah. Is it to
get a bunch of oil?
Well, that's maybe yeah. that too, right?
Yeah.
But definitely. Also, is it to let's say another goal is to, you know, get rid of sentiments of anti-Americanism. That's sure as hell.
Protect citizens for a certain amount of time until
that,
we don't have to anymore.
That
train other military forces.
A lot of those things failed. I mean, like, yeah, they trained some forces that end up being effectively nothing, you know, or whatever, right? Yeah. Or like, oh, wow, you have this, like, this anti-American, really Islamic fundamentalist thing going on. Guess what? Let's invade Iraq and make things worse by making them even more anti-American. Boom, you have ISIS now. Or, like, oh, let's go to Afghanistan and do this and this. Let's train the government with the Northern Alliance, blah, blah. That did fail. The Taliban did control Afghanistan. Boom, they're just back. Like, it's just, it's
snapback.
I mean, like, the only successes are smaller goals, like get rid of Saddam or something like that, and also, like, I guess if you could say the oil or something like that, yeah, okay, maybe they accomplished that task, but like, either way, they made the situation a lot worse for themselves, because at this point what you have is a cold war in the Middle East with Saudi Arabia and Iran, and Iran, who's a much more Iran, who's basically like the center of, you know, anti-Americanism to a certain extent, is now stronger than it was before. Now it has Syria and Iraq under its control. And then you have a Taliban, and there's talks about, I guess, like them doing business with China or whatever. So it's like, so, you know, it's screwed up. It's screwed up.
I want to go back to 9/11 for a second. I read this post on Reddit, and I had known about this vaguely. Reddit. I know that the... What's that?
No, that's fine. I read this post on Reddit.
Oh,
on
yeah.
Reddit,
yeah. I read it on Reddit. This has to do with the hijackers on 9/11. And I knew vaguely that they would meet up in Las Vegas, but I didn't know this much about it. It says, investigators still don't know why all four 9/11 hijackers that served as pilots during the attack had six meetings in Las Vegas between May and August of 2001. They know some reasons, but investigators have been unable to determine why all four of the hijackers that went on to serve as pilots during 9/11 made repeated trips to Las Vegas in the months leading up to the attacks. An FBI agent on the case said everything they did was for a reason. I can tell you it wasn't to see a show. The four met six times in Las Vegas between May and August of 2001. They used computers at a cyber cafe across from UNLV,
oh my God.
Met at a sandwich shop downtown, and at a Starbucks on Flamingo Road. The hijackers also made a stop at the Olympic Garden Strip Club. During one trip in late June of 2001, and that's another thing, the strip club thing. These are supposed to be jihadists.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's questionable.
That is weird.
That's a point that people
went to
brought
fucking
up.
Starbucks, dude. That's questionable.
Yeah, I mean, these are anti-capitalists, supposedly. Yeah. They're going to Starbucks and strip clubs. So that's what raises a lot of questions in terms of
people
conspiracy.
Are contradictory, but
yeah, that's I mean, yeah, that is like
they're like they'll never find us here.
They are in Las Vegas, of all things. Like you can't really get a home cooked meal.
Yeah, where the hell are you gonna go? A casino.
Most of these jihadists are like, you know, I'm not sure with Al Qaeda, but like they're basically just a bunch of like, you know, lonely virgin kids for the most part. I mean, that's probably for ISIS. Yeah, incels.
Okay, it says, so during one trip in late June of 2001, the lead hijacker, Mohammed Atta, rented a car at McCarran Airport and rented a room at Econo Lodge on Las Vegas Boulevard. where he put a do not disturb sign out and then spent 2 days in his room with a view of the stratosphere. Ada's rental car had 110 miles on it when he returned it about three days. Investigators speculated the hijackers may have been meeting with others unknown in Las Vegas, while the FBI believes the final meeting of the hijackers in August may have been to finalize logistics for the attacks. The purpose of the five prior visits/meetings in Vegas are unknown. Another interesting note mentioned in the source below is that 100 members of the Saudi royal family and relatives of Osama bin Laden were staying in Las Vegas on 9/11. Apparently, bin Laden's sister was well known at the Bellagio. After being interviewed by the FBI, the Saudi royals and their associates were permitted to leave Vegas on chartered flights.
Well, that's weird. Yeah. It is a pretty well-known connection, or that Osama had connections or whatever like
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
His family's rich. I mean, they're Saudi oil family, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it raised some eyebrows for sure. I don't think that says anything towards the intentions of 9/11 or whatever. But
I don't think so either. But yeah. I think that there's maybe a handful of people that they didn't know that they came in contact with, mostly, if anything.
Right,
but
right.
Who knows?
I mean, the real question from now on is what do we do from here? America is effectively out of the Middle East, at least literally speaking. Although geopolitically, they're very much still engaged. So, what do they do now? What do they do now? What do the Taliban do now? Yeah, because you essentially have an Islamic emirate now. So it's like.
Do you think at the Bohemian Grove they talked about any of this shit?
Oh, I bet you 100% they talked about it. At least once.
Yeah.
But I don't know, and I don't believe that it was an internal conspiracy. I don't believe that there was a conspiracy planning for it. I guarantee you they talked about it.
They probably talked
about Halliburton, because the Halliburton made a ton of money in Iraq. I guarantee you they talked about that. That's why they invaded Iraq before they invaded Afghanistan.
I feel like there were some conversations that might have happened at Bohemian Grove regarding infiltrating Iraq and all those things.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Sure. I know they say spin your webs not here, but people shoot the shit all the time, whether you want to or not.
Apparently they can do that in, the lakefront or something. They can talk about business.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, they showed me that a bunch of different, sects of the Bohemian Grove or, camps they're located.
Oh, yeah. You want to hear the names?
Yeah, let's hear some of them.
So, say a few of them.
Did we do final thoughts after this?
I think so.
Okay.
All right.
So Zach's going to tell us about some of the sects.
Camps, I guess.
Camps.
Yeah.
In the Bohemian Grove. Full circle, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. The camps' names are the Hillbillies, Mandalay, Caveman, Stowaway, Uplifters, Owl's Nest, Hideaway, Isle of Aves, Lost Angels, Silverado Squatters, Hillside, and Idlewild.
Wow.
They're all different. Each camp has a captain, and one of his many jobs is to upkeep.
Interesting.
I don't know.
God, human society has gotten so complex.
We just need our own Bohemian Grove.
We have become a spectacle.
Yeah.
Anyway, final thoughts, anyone?
Conspiracy, all the things that go with it, suspicion, government, facts, factual things that have happened, like 9/11. Whether you know it or not, you just realize a lot of things in life are uncertain. And it's just about how you handle it and how you go about it afterwards. What your actions are after the fact. True or a figment of your reality.
Mm.
That's my final thought.
Oh, I guess Juana mentioned this earlier. There used to be an American political party which based itself off of conspiracy theories. I think in the late 1800s. They were basically about
Was this the Catholic, anti-Catholic party?
They might be. I'm not sure if they are, but they're probably a lot of people back then were anti-Catholic. So but they based off they were very, very much against Freemasonry and stuff like that. So it's I think conspiracy theories are also we're talking about the individualistic nature of America. Also, being conspiracy theorists is also a very American. Tradition.
Also Turkish as hell.
Yes.
You said that to me one time, and I found there's actually a Wikipedia page for how many conspiracy theories Turkish people believe.
Really? Oh, well, I gotta look it up now. Well, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I have, yeah, the parallels between America and Turkey are actually kind of weird. Like, we're not, you know, not on the land. We were, you know, we kind of emigrated to our land or whatever. But yeah, so like, it's very much part of the tradition. So it's like, you know, we're going to be having conspiracy theories for a while, even if they're true or not. A lot of the other conspiracies are just like conspiracies, like, oh, flat earth, 9/11, whatever. That's just all BS. At least with the Bohemian Grove has something going for it, is that it is genuinely creepy. Yeah. You know, even if it's not as true, like, of the nefariousness, it's like, it's creepy. Like, guys, can you not with the owl statue? like if you're really just gonna, you know, have a beer or whatever, just don't make it so creepy. You're not helping yourselves out. Yeah, that's pretty much my
problem. Not too great for PR.
Right, right. I mean, like, they care, I guess. I mean, they have Ronald Reagan there, for God's sake.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you're right. My final thought would be check us out on Twitter at Crucem Sanctum. The link will be in the description. If you want to support the podcast, that would be helpful. And also, what was I going to say? Also, check out Baudrillard.
Yes.
He's the man.
I think we'll be probably doing a part two sometime.
Check out Bohemian Grove.
That we too. Should do part two, because fuck, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
You're like, that's fuck. My shit now.
Get budget on this stuff.
Our thoughts tonight, everybody.
All right, we'll see you guys later.
Have a good night. Oh, to write a song that has no meaning at all, that doesn't touch a personal nerve or heed a social call, that knows no up or down, that has no right or wrong, that doesn't need a reason to waste some time with song, just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I'll sing ba ba cha ba ben. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, to sing a song that doesn't let it all hang out, that doesn't wave any flag or have any slogan to shout, that knows no east or west, that has no left, that doesn't throw any stones or look for any fight, just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I sing ba ba cha ba ben. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Just to write a song that won't mend a broken heart, that won't woo you like a lover or promise a brand new start, that doesn't preach of rain and fire or heed any higher call, that doesn't need a reason to mean nothing at all, just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I sing ba ba cha ba ben. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I sing ba ba cha ba ben. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Ba ba cha ba ben. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Ba ba cha ba ben. Whoa, whoa, whoa.